I just had a long talk today with a sales manager.
That's the one that was out there.
Who handled a lot of Steve Cannon stuff.
Yeah.
My brother. Why am I even being coy? One of my brothers worked for WCCO during Cannon's reign and was telling me today some hilarious Steve Cannon stories. Because Cannon was deeply involved with clients in the sense that when Cannon would sign off a show saying, I got the money, he wasn't kidding. And I heard some great stuff that Cannon, when negotiating a fee to do an ad, he would say quite literally, what about Morgan? He, actually referring to him as a real person, he needs his cut too. And the sponsors, obviously coveting Cannon's voice for their product, always acquiesced. So there would be two checks. There would be one for Cannon and one for Morgan. Or he might say, Ma eats there frequently. She also needs her taste.
To be taken care
yes,
of.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, man.
And they would have to, they'd have to figure out a way to make sure Cannon got the double hit.
Uh-huh.
Because he watched that kind of thing very closely.
Hi, gang. This is Rookie.
Yeah.
I need to develop a voice is what you're saying.
Passed away last night at the age of 81.
I was shocked to see that. I didn't know he was sick.
Yeah, for about the last third of his life, if not longer, he was one of the greatest health freaks you could have ever met in your life.
Mm-hmm.
He was rail thin and, you know, vocal anti-cigarettes, the whole deal. He used to be here, you know. For 13 years, he was the morning drive guy on KSTP AM 1500.
I tried to find some audio from that, but I could find
absolutely
nothing.
Do you think it's out in Maplewood?
Well, no, because he was here.
Oh.
So they would have had the...
Yeah, but isn't Maplewood now a repository?
No, I think anything that was here would have stayed here. And
this was the Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Yes, it was.
And he left, and I asked my brother, why did he leave here? And it was due to a format change.
Okay.
In the early 70s, KSTP AM 1500, our flagship here, went to more of an upbeat music format. It had John Hines and did very well for a number of years as a music format. And Cannon obviously landed on his feet in afternoon drive beginning in 1971 at WCCO. And Cannon did something better on the air, in my estimation, than anyone who I've ever heard has ever done.
I'd like to hear what that
is. He created a sense of place like no one else I've ever heard. When you listen to Cannon, you knew your hometown, you knew your state. When you tuned into Cannon, and it was true of every day of the week, but particularly say on a Friday afternoon in the fall, you could practically hear the gopher rouser. You could practically smell a steak cooking at Murray's. You could hear water lapping up on the shore of Lake Calhoun. You could see the lights coming on the downtown skylines. You got a feeling of where you were presented through his voice better than anyone I've ever heard. I don't even know if he consciously was aware of that.
I don't know, but you're right. I can remember driving to, I drove from Dayton's to the Grandview Theater. I was in between jobs, and in the afternoon, I listened as probably a 20-year-old or 21-year-old.
Well, that was another thing. He really had a diverse age group in his listeners.
I was there every afternoon.
Yeah.
And I can remember that, and I remember the barking dogs. I remember all that
the
stuff.
The Evola City Band. He gave him a tear in his eye and a clutch at his throat when he heard the dogs. You know? Here it is.
This is from the Pavick Museum.
Yep, where he's been inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame.
And you remember how you felt?
Yes, sir, it is. The Cannon Mess. The last radio show.
What did he mean by last? Literally?
These were taken from his last broadcast.
Thinking of some titles here. Cannon Mess Redux. What do you think, Lash? No. How about the Moribund Mess, Ma?
And that sings.
Well, the last rites on a Cannon Mess. We'll think about it.
So this is from the Pavic Radio Museum in St. Louis Park, and they must have a tape of Steve-O's last show, which would have been in 1997.
Mm-hmm. I can play some snippets from you later.
Right. And that was just two of the three. You didn't hear Morgan in that little hunk there, did you? We'll be back in a moment. Cole, go ahead, please.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Good.
Sitting up in Duluth, looking over Lake Superior and listening to you talk. And I don't know how much longer you want to talk about Steve, but...
As long as we want.
I was his engineer for over 10 years.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's your last name?
Grace.
Cole Grace.
I was inadequate.
Never adequate.
I used to bring the moyeka in, if you ever heard that statement.
No.
I'm from New York, Minnesota. It's fish head soup.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to give me a hard time about that. But I'll just pass along a little. I'm sure Royce and all you guys have got a million stories. But just one thing.
Yeah.
That Steve was a very private person,
mm-hmm.
you guys probably know. And he sat only in the small studio. It only had two chairs and barely fit two people, but it was just him and whoever was engineering his show across the glass from him.
Right.
And when he did Ma Backlash or Morgan, he actually changed his demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
His face changed, his body mannerisms changed. And he became them, and I've kept a few pieces of audio around here somewhere that, and those who may not have heard him, I don't know if they can appreciate this, how fast he could change not voices, but personalities and dialects while he was streaming, mentally streaming whatever he was talking about.
Right, and mentally streaming is the correct way to look at it, right? He didn't write all this out in a two-hour prep period.
Nothing was written.
No.
He would walk in. In fact, he wouldn't walk in, Joe. I mean, I would start the theme song, right?
Yep.
306 or whatever. He wouldn't walk in till just about the last three beats of the song.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. It's the most uncanny thing that I've ever seen. I've been in radio on or off for 30 years. The most uncanny thing I've ever seen.
I learned something today, Cole, that I wasn't aware of. I always thought he used the excuse of Morgan playing in a pool tournament out in New York to avoid doing the state fair, but I was told today he did broadcast from the state fair, you just didn't get any of the characters.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's obviously the theatrical part of that he didn't want to share, you know. But, you know, he would do them. How do I answer that? He may have been able to do them in public, but I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. He became that, I don't know what the theater term is, engaged
mm-hmm.
in how they were. And if you, I don't want to plug CCO, but if you think about him.
You can. There's not much left there.
Sure. No, I got good friends over there. But think about it, Joe. You know, and you've been around a long time. I've followed you as well. But you think of Charlie and Roger and Steve. Those guys came out of theater.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what we don't have, present company accepted, that we don't have in radio today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but
did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. But you were inadequate.
I was absolutely inadequate.
Yeah.
And if you ever made a mistake with Steve, my first day on the air with him, this was 1980 or 81, I hit the wrong intercom, what that is, in radio.
Yeah.
And instead of talking to Dan Hertzcard, I was talking to Steve Cannon in his headset on the air.
Yep.
And I will tell you, I have never forgotten that conversation that he had with me after that.
Yeah.
I felt a quarter of an inch tall. But you know what? he did it for a reason.
Yeah.
He did it because he wanted whatever came out of there to be the best.
Right.
You know? And so that was the difference. One brief story I just thought of while I'm here as well. There was a sales manager at CCO who was I can't even think of his name. He was a rear admiral, I believe, and in the Naval Reserve or something. I apologize if he's listening, but this is a true story. In between commercials or when Sid was on, he would talk with him. But, you know, Point of Law or whatever was running. He had the sales manager come into the very small studio. So there's in this gigantic radio station, there's three people watching what happens.
Right.
Steve, the rear admiral, and me. And I saw Steve tear this guy down to about a 16th of an inch over either a sale he lost or something.
Mm-hmm.
I've never forgotten that day as long as I live.
I bet the rear admiral hasn't either.
Oh, yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
But he did it all because, not because he was mean or spiteful, because he would, you know, but because he just wanted the best to come out. So,
Cole, thank you.
Oh, no, it's a joy to share it, and it brought back memories for me. So,
all right,
Joe, take care.
Thank you. Garage Logic will be back in just a moment. I always thought Cannon avoided the state fair because Morgan was in a pool tournament in Schenectady, New York, somewhere in Buffalo, New York. And I always thought, what a marvelous scam that was.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out he was at the fair. He just would not do Morgan, Ma, or Backlash.
Put him on the back burner.
But his sense of place, I think, is his distinguishing hallmark. I don't think he'd mind either if it was pointed out that basically... if he was on the air for an hour, you know, 40 minutes of that was ads. It was just an incredibly ad-driven 3 hours of radio. Mm-hmm. And that's a talent in and of itself to make that listenable. So I would imagine his endorsements and his relationships with clients and everything became a big part of what he did on the radio. But here's a little bit of...
So mundane, let us do what we have been doing here for 26 years. Every Friday afternoon, Morgan Mundane predicts.
I'm not quite ready yet.
Come on, we've
Stop.
Got...
He's going to... What? Cannon's about to say, come on, we got commercials to get to, right? I'm sorry I interrupted. Start it again. He rests my case.
I'm not quite ready yet.
Come on, we've got all sorts of commercials to get in.
All right.
Okay, so Monday night, let's start with that. Now, let's start with the Gophers. I want to get that out of the way. All right, the Gophers are at East Lansing, Michigan, against the Spartans. Michigan State, a 23-point favorite. This is going to be disaster city for the Gophers. Under their new coach, Mason, he's playing with the Wackers recruits. These players will play hard, but they don't belong in the same field with the Spartans. Final score, Morg, State 56. Minnesota 16. All right. Monday night, the Patriots at Denver. These are the two best teams in the AFC. And it could go either way, but I'm going with the home club. I think it's worth something on Monday night. Denver 26, the Patriots 20. The Saints are at the Bears. Well, Ditka was for many years a coach of Chicago. Coming back with the Aints, as they're called, or the Saints. It's going to be a tight contest. Neither team has the horses. I think the Bears will win 10-9. The Jets at the Colts. The Jets were the laughing stock of the league for years, but they always had great talent. Now they got a great coach in Parcells, and they're beating people, and they'll beat the Colts 23-20. Tennessee at Seattle.
All right, hold it. That's another thing. He probably was the first guy on the air to do picks on a Friday. Right? Mm-hmm. And when he did that Gopher pick, that was part of setting the local scene. John, go ahead.
Joe, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've got a question for you concerning Steve also, you know, Backlash. I was just wondering, I don't know if somebody's already asked this question or not, but do you think that he could get away with doing that character if he was on the radio today?
Sure.
You think so?
Sure, he got away with it as recently as 1997.
Right.
And I think all the sensibilities we're currently experiencing were pretty well established by 1997.
Right. We were just having I was just speaking with another guy, and we were in we just weren't sure if that would, you know, if that would fly or if they'd be all over him. Now, I know he wouldn't care personally, but I'm just wondering if the station would buckle under, you know.
I mean, it was such a terribly benign character that I just can't see that it would have caused a problem today.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks, John.
Thank you.
Well, the worst he said was, my dear fellow. I mean,
right. Ron?
Yeah, hi, Joe. I think the thing I remember about Steve and Morgan, and by the way, I think Morgan was from Schenectady, not Buffalo.
Okay.
But was I believe it was about 1978 when Cal Stahl was still coaching the Gophers, and Michigan came into town. They were rated number one in the country, a huge favorite, and Morgan predicted that the Gophers would win.
And they did win that game.
16-0,
yes,
Joe.
Yep.
And it was a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just, I'll never forget that one. And he was a great prognosticator, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, thank you. But that's a good run in afternoon from 1971 to 1997.
Man, you're not kidding, especially if you're getting, you know, two for a take care of Morgan. What about me?
I think that's hilarious that he would get a he'd get a spiff for a fake person. He'd get a spiff for a voice.
I don't think we could get away with that today.
No. Gordy.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Good.
You know, my first job at the Pioneer Press, I was a courier. I ran copy back and forth to Minneapolis and stop at CCO. And Cannon just loved newspapers and newspaper guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd see me and you'd go, hey, Gordo.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you know that shooter guy?
Mm-hmm.
He would quiz me about the personalities of people, and he just loved Long and playing tennis with them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what his nickname for Sid was?
Young fella?
No, the ink-stained wretch.
Oh, the ink-stained wretch. Okay.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say that.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
The young fella comes from another story that was told to me today, and that's when I believe Giel was let go.
Okay.
From being on air. And Sid went on with Cannon,
mm-hmm,
and began one of the famous Sid tirades.
He's a little upset.
Of all time, you know. Hey, and he started naming all of the guys who Sid thought was treated unfairly. Or maybe it was when Giel was let go by the U.
Mm.
But Sid had a litany of guys going back to, you know, the 30s. They crapped on this guy. They crapped on this guy. They crapped on Cal Stoll. And finally, Steve-O said, that's enough, young fella. To a guy, what? Yeah,
25 years.
10, 12 years older than he was. That's enough, young fella. So maybe Steve-O could even figure out how to handle Sid. I would imagine Sid's column tomorrow will be pretty interesting because we will be told great new insights, because I'm sure they had a tremendous relationship.
Well, you know, in years past, at openings, the opener for baseball, Cannon was around there. He was usually around in the press box for at least opening night.
Yeah, but then he really got smart, and he spent a lot of time in Naples, Florida.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that was a pretty good way to look at it, too.
Yeah.
Just a moment. Tim?
Yes?
You're on the air.
How are you?
Fine.
I just wanted to relay a story about Steve Cannon. It was the late 80s, and he always painted the picture that he was in the basement studio.
Right.
Which, of course, he was not. He was on the second floor. But all of a sudden, during the broadcast, he asked Morgan, what was he looking at? And Morgan was supposedly looking up through the grates to see what kind of shoes women wear.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Ma Linger jumped in and said, Morgan, you shouldn't be doing that. And they got into a terrible argument. And then Morgan, of course, asked Ma Linger, what kind of heels do you wear? And, of course, Ma Linger said, well, I wear pumps for this, and I wear 6-inch heels for this. And Morgan said, well, that's probably when you're closing in on a man. And long story short, it turned out Steve had to be the negotiator between these two on, you know, what he could look at and what he should say and things of that nature.
Do you know that I remember that?
Really?
I absolutely remember that.
Yeah, and it went on, if you recall, during the show, Morgan would carry on and say something else, and, of course, Ma Linger had to, you know, counter him, and Steve finally said, all right, we're putting a stop to this, but I swear it went on for most of the show.
And it had to be incredibly difficult to pull that off.
Yes. And Steve painted the picture. It was an 80-degree day,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it was early summer, and it was just wonderfully done because I could imagine this so-called little man looking up through the grates, and I just enjoyed, you know, listening to it at the time.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, like Cole, his engineer, said. Was it Cole Grace?
Cole, yeah. Yeah, you had
the guy from Duluth that just called earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He would do this instantaneously. That's hard to do.
Yeah, because you have to be thinking ahead and you have to remember.
Keep your head straight.
Right, who you are in character to.
I mean,
and thinking of your next question.
Cannon worked at stations in Mason City, Iowa, and in Stillwater, Bemidji, and Duluth before he arrived here at KSTP. And then 3 weeks after he left KSTP, he was at CCO for that final long run, which we all remember. And, well, many of us remember his long run here on the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. I believe that's what he called it, University Avenue, mm-hmm. the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, where he was the morning show. He would do things like offer the gals a uniform of the day, things like that. You know. So maybe there were some things he did back then that you wouldn't do now, but...
The uniform of the day.
I don't think Backlash LaRue was one of them. I think Backlash was kind of was an apolitical fellow, very benign.
Okay.
And I think he could have easily gotten away with Backlash LaRue just as much today as he did 15, 16 years ago.